Perhaps in another life it could have been. She was sure some of them saw her as a colleague. Many, however, just saw her as the woman who sponsored them so she'd have new fabrials to show off at parties. Perhaps she was just that. A light-eyed lady of rank had to have some hobbies, didn't she? I assume you're here to escort me to the meeting? The High Princes, abuzz about the assassin's attack, had demanded that Elokar meet with them today. Adolin nodded, twitching and glancing over his shoulder as he heard a noise, instinctively stepping protectively to put himself between Navani and whatever it was. The noise, however, was just some workers taking the side off of one of Dalinar's massive rolling bridges. Those were the main purpose of these grounds. She'd merely appropriated the area for her test. She held her arm out to him. "You're as bad as your father."
"Perhaps I am," he said, taking her arm.
That plated hand of his might have made some women uncomfortable, but she'd been around plate far, far more often than most. They started down the wide steps together.
"Aunt," he said, "have you been, doing anything to encourage my father's advances? Between you two, I mean."
For a boy who spent half his life flirting with anything in a dress, he certainly did blush a lot when he said that. "Encourage him," Navani said. "I did more than that, child. I practically had to seduce the man. Your father is certainly stubborn."
"I hadn't noticed," Adolin said dryly. "You realize how much more difficult you've made his position. He's trying to force the other High Princes to follow the codes using the social constraints of honor. Yet he's pointedly ignoring something similar. A bothersome tradition."
"You seem content to ignore only the ones you find bothersome while expecting us to follow all the others."
"Of course," Navani said, smiling.
"You haven't figured that out before now?" Adolin's expression grew grim. "Don't sulk," Navani said. "You're free from the causal for now, as Jasnah has apparently decided to gallivant off someplace. I won't have the chance to marry you off quite yet, at least not until she reappears. Knowing her, that could be tomorrow, or it could be months from now."
"I'm not sulking," Adolin said.
"Of course you aren't," she said, patting his armored arm as they reached the bottom of the steps. "Let's get to the palace. I don't know if your father will be able to delay the meeting for us if we're tardy." 36. A new woman. And when they were spoken of by the common folk, the releasers claimed to be misjudged because of the dreadful nature of their power. And when they dealt with others, always were they firm in their claim that other epithets, notably dustbringers, often heard in the common speech, were unacceptable substitutions, in particular for their similarity to the word void-bringers. They did also exercise anger in great prejudice regarding it, though to many who speak, there was little difference between these two assemblies. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 17, page 11. Shallan awoke as a new woman. She wasn't yet completely certain who that woman was, but she knew who that woman was not. She was not the same frightened girl who had suffered the storms of a broken home. She was not the same naive woman who had tried to steal from Jasnah Kolin. She was not the same woman who had been deceived by Cabsal and then Tin. That did not mean she was not still frightened or naive. She was both. But she was also tired. Tired of being shoved around. Tired of being misled. Tired of being dismissed. During the trip with Tevlakov, she'd pretended she could lead and take charge. She no longer felt the need to pretend. She knelt beside one of Tin's trunks. She'd resisted letting the men break it open. She wanted a few trunks for keeping clothing. But her search of the tent hadn't found the proper key. "Pattern," she said. "Can you look inside of this? Squeeze in through the keyhole?"
"Mmm."
Pattern moved onto the side of the trunk,
then shrank down to the size of her thumbnail. He moved in easily. She heard his voice from inside.
Dark.
Drat, she said, fishing out a sphere and holding it up to the keyhole. Does that help?
I see a pattern, he said.
A pattern? What kind of click? Shallan started, then reached to lift the lid of the trunk. Pattern buzzed happily inside. You unlocked it.
A pattern, he said happily.
You can move things?
Push a little here and there, he said. Very little strength on this side.
The trunk was filled with clothing and had a pouch of spheres in a black cloth bag. Both would be very useful. Shallan searched through and found a dress with fine embroidery and a modern cut. Tin needed it, of course, for times when she pretended to be of higher status. Shallan put it on, found it loose through the bust but otherwise acceptable, then did her face and hair at the mirror using the dead woman's makeup and brushes. When she left the tent that morning, she felt, for the first time in what seemed ages, like a true light-eyed woman. That was well, for today she would finally reach the shattered plains and hopefully destiny. She strode out into the morning light. Her men worked alongside the caravan's parshmen to break down camp. With Tin's guards dead, the only armed force in the camp belonged to Shallan. Vatha fell into step beside her.
We burned the bodies last night as you instructed, Brightness. And another guard patrol stopped by this morning while you were getting ready. They obviously wanted us to know that they intend to keep the peace. If someone camps in this spot and finds the bones of Tin and her soldiers in the ashes, it could lead to questions. I don't know that the caravan workers will keep your secret if asked.
Thank you, Shallan said. Have one of the men gather the bones into a sack. I'll deal with them. Had she really just said that? Vatha nodded curtly as if this were the expected answer.
Some of the men are uncomfortable now that we're so close to the war camps.
Do you still think I'm incapable of keeping my promises to them? He actually smiled.
No. I think I've been right convinced, Brightness.
Well then?
I'll reassure them, he said.
Excellent. They parted ways as Shallan sought out Makeub. When she found him, the bearded, aging caravan trademaster bowed to her with far more respect than he'd ever shown her before. He'd already heard about the shard blade. I will need one of your men to run down to the war camps and find me a palanquin, Shallan said. Sending one of my soldiers is currently impossible. She wouldn't risk them being recognized and imprisoned.
Certainly, Makeub said, voice stiff. The price will be,
she gave him a pointed stare,
paid out of my own purse, as thanks to you for a safe arrival.
He put an odd emphasis on the word safe, as if it were of questionable merit in the sentence. And the price for your discretion? Shallan asked.
My discretion can always be assured, Brightness,
the man said.
And my lips are not the ones that should trouble you.
True enough. He climbed up into his wagon.
One of my men will run on ahead, and we will send a palanquin back for you. With that I bid you farewell. I hope it is not insulting for me to say, Brightness, that I hope we never meet again.
Then our views in that regard are in agreement. He nodded to her and tapped his chul. The wagon rolled away.
I listened to them last night, Pattern said with a buzzing, excited voice from the back of her dress. Is non-existence really such a fascinating concept to humans?
They spoke of death, did they? Shallan asked.
They kept wondering if you would come for them. I realize that non-existence is not something to look forward to, but they talked on and on and on about it. Fascinating indeed.
Well, keep your ears open, Pattern. I suspect this day is going to only get more interesting.
She walked back toward the tent.
But I don't have ears, he said. Ah, yes. A metaphor? Such delicious lies. I will remember that idiom.
The Alethi war camps were so much more than Shallan had expected them to be. 10 compact cities in a row, each casting up smoke from thousands of fires. Lines of caravans streamed in and out, passing the crater rims that made up their walls. Each camp flew hundreds of banners proclaiming the presence of high-ranked Light Eyes. As the palanquin carried her down a slope, she was truly stunned at the magnitude of the population. Stormfather. She'd once considered the regional fair on her father's lands to be a huge gathering. How many mouths were there to feed down below? How much water did they require from each high storm? Her palanquin lurched. She'd left the wagon behind. The chulls belonged to Makub. She'd try to sell the wagon, if it remained, when she sent her men for it later. For now, she rode the palanquin, which was carried by Parshmen, under the watchful eyes of a light-eyed man who owned them and rented out the vehicle. He strolled along ahead. The irony of being carried on the backs of Voidbringers as she entered the war camps was not lost on her. Behind the vehicle marched Vatha and her 18 guards, then her 5 slaves, who carried her trunks. She dressed them in shoes and clothing from the merchants, but you couldn't cover up months of slavery with a new outfit. And the soldiers weren't much better. Their uniforms had only been washed when a high storm hit, and that was more of a douse than a wash. The occasional whiff she got of them was why she had them marching behind her palanquin. She hoped she wasn't as bad. She had Tin's perfume, but the Alethi elite preferred frequent bathing and a clean scent, part of the wisdom of the heralds. Wash with the coming high storm, both servant and bright lord, to ward away rot-spren and purify the body. She'd done what she could with some pails of water, but did not have the luxury of stopping to prepare more properly. She needed the protection of a high prince, and quickly. Now that she had arrived, the immensity of her tasks struck her afresh. Discover what Yasna had been looking for on the shattered plains. Use the information there to persuade the Alethi leadership to take measures against the Parshmen. Investigate the people Tin had been meeting with and... Do what? Scam them somehow? Find out what they knew about Urethiru? Deflect their attention away from her brothers? And perhaps find a way to repay them for what they'd done to Yasna? So much to do. She would need resources. Dalinar Kholin was her best hope for that. But will he take me in? She whispered. Hmm? Pattern said from the seat nearby. I will need him as a patron. If Tin's sources know that Yasna is dead, then Dalinar probably knows as well. How will he react to my unexpected arrival? Will he take her books, pat me on the head, and send me back to Yarkaved? The Kholin house has no need of a bond to a minor Vaden like me, and I'm just rambling out loud, aren't I? Pattern said. He sounded drowsy, though she didn't know if Spren could get tired. Her anxiety grew as her procession approached the war camps. Tin had been adamant that Shallan not ask for Dalinar's protection, as that would make her beholden to him. Shallan had killed the woman, but she still respected Tin's opinion. Was there merit to what she'd said about Dalinar? A knock came at her palanquin window.
We're going to have the Parshmen put you down for a bit, Vatha said. Need to ask around and see where the High Prince is.
Fine. She waited impatiently. They must have sent the palanquin owner on the errand. Vatha was as nervous as she was at the idea of sending one of his men into the war camps alone. She eventually heard a muffled conversation outside
and Vatha returned, his boots scraping rock. She drew back the curtain, looking up at him.
Dalinar Kholin is with the king, Vatha said. The whole lot of the high princes are there.
He looked disturbed as he turned toward the war camps.
Something's on the winds, Brightness.
He squinted.
Too many patrols. Lots of soldiers out. The palanquin owner won't say, but from the sound of it, something happened recently. Something deadly.
Take me to the king, then, Shallan said. Vatha raised an eyebrow at her. The king of Alethkar was arguably the most powerful man in the world.
You aren't going to kill him, are you?
Vatha asked softly, leaning down.
What?
I figure it's one reason a woman would have, you know.
He didn't meet her eyes.
Get close, summon the thing, have it through a man's chest before anyone knows what happened.
I'm not going to kill your king, she said, amused.
Wouldn't care if you did, Vatha said softly. Almost hope you would. He's a child wearing his father's clothes, that one is. Everything's gotten worse for Alethkar since he took the throne. But my men, we'd have a hard time getting away if you did something like that. Hard time indeed.
I will keep my promise. He nodded, and she let the drapes fall back down over the palanquin window. Storm, father. Give a woman a shard blade, get her close. Had anyone ever tried that? They must have, though thinking about it made her sick. The palanquin turned northward. Passing the war camps took a long time. They were enormous. Eventually she peeked out and saw a tall hill to the left with a building sculpted from and onto the stone of the top. A palace? What if she did convince Bright Lord Dalinar to take her in and trust her with Yasna's research? What would she be in Dalinar's household? A lesser scribe, to be tucked aside and ignored? That was how she'd spent most of her life. She found herself suddenly passionately determined not to let it happen again. She needed the freedom and the funding to investigate Urithiru and Yasna's murder. Shallan would accept nothing else. She could accept nothing else. So make it happen, she thought. Would that it were so easy as wishing. As the palanquin turned up the switchbacks leading to the palace, her new satchel, from Tin's things, shook and hit her foot. She picked it up and flipped through the pages inside, finding the crinkled sketch of Bluth as she'd imagined him, a hero instead of a slaver. Pattern said from the seat beside her. This picture is a lie, Shallan said. Yes, and yet it isn't. This is what he became at the end. To a small degree, yes. So what is the lie and what is the truth? Pattern hummed softly to himself, like a contented axe hound before the hearth. Shallan fingered the picture, smoothing it. Then she pulled out a sketch pad and a pencil and started drawing. It was a difficult task in the lurching palanquin. This would not be her finest drawing. Still, her fingers moved across the sketch with an intensity she hadn't felt in weeks. Broad lines at first, to fix the image in her head. She wasn't copying a memory this time. She was searching for something nebulous, a lie that could be real, if she could just imagine it correctly. She scratched frantically at the paper, hunkering down, and soon stopped feeling the rhythm of the porter's steps. She saw only the drawing, knew only the emotions she bled onto that page. Yasna's determination, Tin's confidence, a sense of rightness that she could not describe, but which she drew from her brother Helleran, the best person she'd ever known. It all poured from her into the pencil and onto the page. Streaks and lines that became shadows and patterns that became figures and faces. A quick sketch, hurried, yet one alive. It depicted Shallan as a confident young woman standing before Dalinar Kholin, as she imagined him. She'd put him in shard plate, as he and those around him studied Shallan with penetrating consternation. She stood strong, hand raised toward them as she spoke with confidence and power. No trembling here, no fear of confrontation. This is what I would have been, Shallan thought, if I had not been raised in a household of fear. So this is what I will be today. It wasn't a lie. It was a different truth. A knock came at the palanquin's door. It had stopped moving, she'd barely noticed. With a nod to herself, she folded the sketch and slipped it into the pocket of her safehand sleeve. Then she stepped out of the vehicle and onto cold rock. She felt invigorated and realized she had sucked in a tiny amount of stormlight without meaning to. The palace was both finer and more mundane than she might have expected. Certainly this was a war camp, and so the king's seat wouldn't match the majesty of the royal dwellings of Carbranth. At the same time, it was amazing that such a structure could have been crafted here, away from the culture and resources of Alethkar proper. The towering stone fortress of sculpted rock, several stories high, perched at the pinnacle of the hill. Vatha, Gaz, she said. Attend me. The rest of you take up position here. I will send word. They saluted her. She wasn't certain if that was appropriate or not. She strode forward and noticed with amusement that she'd chosen one of the tallest of the deserters and one of the shortest to accompany her, and so when they flanked her, it created an even slope of height. Vatha, herself, Gaz. Had she really just chosen her guards based on aesthetic appeal? The front gates of the palace complex faced west, and here Shallan found a large group of guards standing before open doors that led to a deep tunnel of a corridor into the hill itself. 16 guards at the door? She had read that King Elokar was paranoid, but this seemed excessive. "You'll need to announce me, Vatha," she said softly as they walked up.
"As?"
"Brightness Shallan Devar, ward of Yasna Kolin and causal betrothed of Adolin Kolin. Wait to say it until I indicate." The grizzled man nodded, hand on his axe. Shallan didn't share his discomfort. If anything, she was excited. She strode by the guards with head held high, acting as if she belonged. They let her pass. Shallan almost stumbled. Over a dozen guards at the door and they didn't challenge her. Several raised hands as if to do so. She saw this from the corner of her eye, but they backed down into silence. Vatha snorted softly from beside her as they entered the tunnel-like corridor beyond the gates. The acoustics caught echoing whispers as the guards at the door conversed. Finally, one of them did call out after her.
"Brightness?"
She stopped, turning toward them and raising an eyebrow.
"I'm sorry, Brightness," the guard called. "But you are..."
She nodded to Vatha.
"You don't recognize Brightness Devar?" he barked. "The causal betrothed of Brightlord Adolin Kolin?"
The guards hushed, and Shallan turned around to continue on her way. The conversation behind started up again almost immediately, loud enough this time that she could catch a few words.
"Never can keep track of that man's women."
They reached an intersection. Shallan looked one way, then the other. "Upward, I'd guess," she said.
"Kings do like to be at the top of everything," Vatha said. "Attitude might get you past the outer door, Brightness, but it's not going to get you in to see Kolin."
"Are you really his betrothed?"
Gaz asked nervously, scratching at his eye patch. "Last I checked," Shallan said, leading the way. "Which, granted, was before my ship sank." She wasn't worried about getting in to see Kolin. She'd at least get an audience. They continued upward, asking servants for directions. Those scuttled about in clusters, jumping when spoken to. Shallan recognized that kind of timidity. Was the king as terrible a master as her father had been? As they went higher, the structure seemed less like a fortress and more like a palace. There were reliefs on the walls, mosaics on the floor, carved shutters, an increasing number of windows. By the time they approached the king's conference chamber near the top, wood trim framed the stone walls, with silver and gold leaf worked into the carvings. Lamps held massive sapphires, beyond the size of ordinary denominations, radiating bright blue light. At least she wouldn't lack for stormlight, should she need it. The passage into the king's conference room was clogged with men, soldiers in a dozen different uniforms.
"Damnation," Gaz said. "Those are Sadius's colors there."
"And Thanadol and Aladar and Ruthar," Vatha said. "He's meeting with all the high princes, as I said."
Shallan could pick out factions easily, dredging from her studies of Yasna's book the names and heraldry of all 10 high princes. Sadius's soldiers chatted with those of High Prince Ruthar and High Prince Aladar. Dalinar stood alone, and Shallan could sense hostility between them and the others in the hallway. Dalinar's guards had very few light eyes among them. That was odd. And did that one man at the door look familiar? The tall, dark-eyed man with the blue coat that went down to his knees. The man with the shoulder-length hair curling slightly. He was speaking in a low voice with another soldier, who was one of the men from the gates below.
"Looks like they beat us up here," Vatha said softly.
The man turned and looked her right in the eyes, then glanced down toward her feet.
"Oh, no."
The man, an officer by the uniform, strode directly toward her. He ignored the hostile stares of the other High Prince's soldiers as he walked right up to Shallan.
"Prince Adolin," he said flatly, "is engaged to a horn-eater?"
She'd almost forgotten the encounter 2 days outside of the war camps.
"I'm going to strangle that,"
she cut off, feeling a stab of depression. She had ended up killing Tin. "Obviously not," Shallan said, raising her chin and not using the horn-eater accent. "I was traveling alone through the wilderness. Revealing my true identity did not seem prudent." The man grunted.
"Where are my boots?"
"Is this how you address a light-eyed lady of rank?"
"It's how I address a thief," the man said. "I'd just gotten those boots."
"I'll have a dozen new pairs sent to you," Shallan said, "after I have spoken with High Prince Dalinar."
"You think I'm going to let you see him?
You think you get to choose?
I'm captain of his guard, woman."
Blast, she thought. That was going to be inconvenient. At least she wasn't trembling from the confrontation. She really was past that. Finally. "Well, tell me, captain," she said. "What is your name?"
"Kaladin."
Odd. That sounded like a light-eye's name. "Excellent. Now I have a name to use when I tell the High Prince about you. He's not going to like his son's betrothed being treated this way." Kaladin waved to several of his soldiers. The men in blue surrounded her and Vatha and... Where had Gaz gotten off to? She turned and found him backing down the corridor. Kaladin spotted him and started visibly.
"Gaz?" Kaladin demanded. "What is this?"
"Ah," the one-eyed man stammered. "Lord Kaladin, you're, an officer. So things have been going well for you."
"You know this man?" Shallan asked Kaladin.
"He tried to get me killed," Kaladin said,
voice even,
"on multiple occasions. He's one of the most hateful little rats I've ever known."
"Great."
"You're not Adolin's betrothed," Kaladin said, meeting her gaze as several of his men gleefully seized Gaz, who had backed into other guards coming up from below. "Adolin's betrothed has drowned. You are an opportunist with a very bad sense of timing. I doubt that Dalinar Kolin will be pleased to find a swindler trying to capitalize on the death of his niece."
She finally started to feel nervous. Vatha glanced at her, obviously worried that this Kaladin's guesses were correct. Shallan steadied herself and reached into her safe pouch. pulling out a piece of paper she'd found in Yasna's notes. "Is High Lady Navani in that room?" Kaladin didn't reply. "Show her this, please," Shallan said. Kaladin hesitated, then took the sheet. He looked it over, but obviously couldn't tell that he was holding it upside down. It was one of the written communications between Yasna and her mother, arranging for the causal. Communicated via span read, there would be two copies, the one that had been written on Yasna's side, and the one on Brightness Navani's side.
"We'll see," Kaladin said.
"We'll..." Shallan found herself sputtering. If she couldn't get in to see Dalinar, then storm this man. She took his arm in her free hand as he turned to give orders to his men. "Is this really all because I lied to you?" she demanded more softly. He looked back at her.
"It's about doing my job."
"Your job is to be offensive and asinine?"
"No, I'm offensive and asinine on my own time, too. My job is to keep people like you away from Dalinar Kholin."
"I guarantee he will want to see me."
"Well, forgive me for not trusting the word of a horn-eater princess. Would you like some shells to chew on while my men tow you away to the dungeons?" "All right, that's enough."
"The dungeons sound wonderful," she said. "At least there I'd be away from you, idiot man."
"Only for a short time. I'd be by to interrogate you."
"What? I couldn't pick a more pleasant option? Like being executed?"
"You're assuming I could find a hangman willing to put up with your blathering long enough to fit the rope."
"Well, if you want to kill me, you could always let your breath do the job." He reddened, and several guards nearby started snickering. They tried to stifle their reaction as Captain Kaladin looked at them.
"I should envy you," he said, turning back to her. "My breath needs to be up close to kill, while that face of yours can kill any man from a distance."
"Any man?" she asked. "Why, it's not working on you. I guess that's proof that you're not much of a man."
"I misspoke. I didn't mean any man, just males of your own species. But don't worry, I'll take care not to let our chulls get close."
"Oh, your parents are in the area then?" His eyes widened, and for the first time she seemed to have really gotten under his skin.
"My parents have nothing to do with this."
"Yes, that makes sense. I'd expect that they want nothing to do with you."
"At least my ancestors had the sense not to breed with a sponge," he snapped, probably a reference to her red hair.
"At least I know my parentage," she snapped back. They glared at each other. Part of Shallan felt satisfaction at being able to make him lose his temper, though from the heat she felt in her face, she'd let go of hers as well. Yasna would have been disappointed. How often had she tried to get Shallan to control her tongue? True wit was controlled wit. It shouldn't be allowed to run free any more than an arrow should be loosed in a random direction. For the first time, Shallan realized that the large hallway had grown silent. A great number of the soldiers and attendants were staring at her and the officer.
"Bah!"
Kaladin shook her arm free of his. She hadn't let go after getting his attention earlier.
"I revise my opinion of you. You're obviously a high-born Light Eyes. Only they are capable of being this infuriating."
He stalked away from her toward the doors to the king's chamber. Nearby, Vatha relaxed visibly.
"Getting into a shouting match with the head of High Prince Dalinar's guard?" he whispered to her. "Was that wise?"
"We created an incident," she said, calming herself. "Now Dalinar Kholin will hear of this one way or another. That guardsman won't be able to keep my arrival secret from him." Vatha hesitated.
"So it was part of the plan?"
"Hardly," Shallan said. "I'm not nearly that clever, but it should work anyway." She looked to Gaz, who was released by Kaladin's guards so he could join the two of them, though all were still under careful watch.
"Even for a deserter," Vatha said under his breath, "you're a coward, Gaz."
Gaz just stared at the ground. "How do you know him?" Shallan asked.
"He was a slave," Gaz said, "at the lumberyards where I used to work.
storming man. He's dangerous, Brightness. Violent. A troublemaker. I don't know how he got to such a high position in such a short time.
Kaladin hadn't entered the conference chamber. However, the doors cracked a moment later. The meeting appeared to be over, or at least on break. Several aides rushed in to see if their high princes needed anything, and chatter started up among the guards. Captain Kaladin shot her a glance, then reluctantly entered, carrying her sheet of paper. Shallan forced herself to stand with hands clasped before her, one sleeved, the other not, to keep herself from looking nervous. Eventually, Kaladin stepped back out, a look of annoyed resignation on his face. He pointed at her, then thumbed over his shoulder, indicating she could enter. His guards let her pass, though they restrained Vatha when he tried to follow her. She waved him back, took a deep breath, then strode through the moving crowd of soldiers and aides, entering the king's conference chamber.
37. A Matter of Perspective. Now as each order was thus matched to the nature and temperament of the heralded named patron, there was none more archetypal of this than the Stone Wards, who followed after Talanalat Ilin, Stone Sinew, Herald of War. They thought it a point of virtue to exemplify resolve, strength, and dependability. Alas, they took less care for imprudent practice of their stubbornness, even in the face of proven error. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 13, Page 1. The meeting finally reached a break. They weren't done. Stormfather, it didn't seem like they'd ever be done. But the arguing was over for the moment. Adolin stood, wounds along his leg and side protesting, and left his father and aunt to speak in hushed tones as the large chamber filled with a buzz of conversation. How did father stand it? A full 2 hours had passed, according to Navani's fabrial clock on the wall. 2 hours of high princes and their wives complaining about the assassin in white. Nobody could agree on what should be done. They all ignored the truth, stabbing them in the face. Nothing could be done. Nothing other than Adolin staying alert and practicing, training to face the monster when he returned. And you think you can beat him? When he can walk on walls and make the very spren of nature obey him? It was a discomforting question. At his father's suggestion, Adolin had reluctantly changed out of his plate and into something more appropriate. We need to project confidence at this meeting, Dalinar had said, not fear. General Kahl wore the armor instead, hiding in a room to the side with a strike force. Father seemed to think it unlikely the assassin would strike during the meeting. If the assassin wanted to kill the high princes, he could take them much more easily alone in the night. Attacking them all together, in the company of their guards and dozens of shard-bearers, seemed like it would be an imprudent decision. Indeed, there were shards aplenty at this meeting. Three of the high princes wore their plate, and the others had shard-bearers in attendance. Abrobadar, Yakimov, Resi, Relis. Adolin had rarely seen so many collected together at once. Would any of it matter? Accounts had been flooding in from around the world for weeks. Kings slaughtered, ruling bodies decapitated all across Roshar. In Yakaved, the assassin had reportedly killed dozens of soldiers bearing half-shard shields that could block his blade, as well as 3 shard-bearers, including the king. It was a crisis that spanned the entire world, and one man was behind it, assuming he was even a man. Adolin found himself a cup of sweet wine at the edge of the room, poured by an eager servant in blue and gold. Orange wine, basically just juice. Adolin downed an entire cup anyway, then went looking for Relis. He needed to be doing something other than sitting and listening to people complain. Fortunately, he'd concocted something while sitting there. Relis, Ruthar's son and star shard-bearer, was a man with a face like a shovel, flat and wide, with a nose that seemed like it had been smashed. He wore a frilly outfit of green and yellow. It wasn't even interesting. He had the choice to wear anything, and he chose this? He was a full shard-bearer, one of the few in the camps. He was also the current dueling champion, which, along with his parentage, made him of particular interest to Adolin. He stood speaking with his cousin Ilit and a group of three of Sadius's attendants, women in the traditional Vorin Hava. One of those women, Milali, gave Adolin a pointed glare. She was as pretty as she'd ever been, her hair up in complex braids and stuck with hair spikes. What had he done to annoy her again? It had been forever since they'd courted. "Relis," Adolin said, raising his cup. "I just wanted you to know that I found it very brave of you to offer to fight the assassin yourself when you spoke earlier. It is inspiring that you'd be willing to die for the crown." Relis scowled at Adolin. How did someone get a face so flat? Had he been dropped as a child?
"You're assuming I'd lose."
"Well, of course you would," Adolin said, chuckling. "I mean, let's be honest, Relis. You've been sitting on your title for almost half a year. You haven't won a duel of any importance since you defeated Epinar."
"This from a man who spent years refusing almost all challenges," Milali said, looking Adolin up and down. "I'm surprised your daddy let you free to come talk. Isn't he afraid you might hurt yourself?"
"Nice to see you too, Milali," Adolin said. "How's your sister?"
"Off limits."
Oh, right. That was what he'd done. Honest mistake. "Relis," Adolin said, "you claim you'd face this assassin, yet you're frightened of dueling me?" Relis spread his hands, one holding a shimmering goblet of red wine.
"It's protocol, Adolin. I'll duel you once you fight up through the brackets for a year or two. I can't just take on any old challenger, particularly not in a bout with our shards on the line."
"Any old challenger?" Adolin said. "Relis, I'm one of the best there is."
"Are you?"
Relis asked, smiling.
"After that display with Eraniv?"
"Yes, Adolin," said Ilit, Relis's short, balding cousin. "You've only had a handful of duels of any consequence in recent memory. In one of those, you basically cheated, and in the second, you won by sheer luck."
Relis nodded.
"If I bend the rules and accept your challenge, then it will break the storm wall. I'll have dozens of inferior swordsmen nipping at me."
"No, you won't," Adolin said. "Because you won't be a shard-bearer any longer. You'll have lost to me."
"So confident," Relis said, chuckling, turning to Ilit and the women. "Listen to him. He ignores the rankings for months, then leaps back in and assumes he can beat me."
"I'll wager both my plate and blade," Adolin said, "and my brother's plate and blade, along with the shard I won from Eraniv. 5 shards to your 2. Ilit started. The man was a shard-bearer with only the plate, given to him by his cousin. He turned to Relis, looking hungry. Relis paused. Then he closed his mouth and cocked his head lazily to the side as he met Adolin's eyes.
"You're a fool, Colin."
"I'm offering it here, before witnesses," Adolin said. "You win this bout, you take every shard my family owns. What's stronger, your fear or your greed?"
"My pride," Relis said. "No contest, Adolin."
Adolin ground his teeth. He'd hoped the duel with Eraniv would make others underestimate him, make them more likely to duel him. It wasn't working. Relis barked out a laugh. He held out his arms to Milali and tugged her away, his attendants following. Ilit hesitated. "Well, it's better than nothing," Adolin thought, a plan forming.
"What about you?"
Adolin asked the cousin. Ilit looked him up and down. Adolin didn't know the man well. He was said to be a passable duelist, though he was often in his cousin's shadow. But that hunger. Ilit wanted to be a full shard-bearer.
"Ilit?"
Relis said.
"Same offer,"
Ilit said, meeting Adolin's gaze. "You're 5 to my 1. What a terrible deal.
"Same offer," Adolin said.
"I'm in,"
Elit said. Behind him, Ruthar's son groaned. He grabbed Elit by the shoulder, towing him to the side with a growl.
You told me to fight up through the brackets, Adolin said to Relis. I'm doing that. Not my cousin.
Too late, Adolin said.
You heard it. The ladies heard it.
When do we fight, Elit?
7 days, Elit said. On Chachel.
7 days. A long wait, considering a challenge like this. So he wanted time to train, did he?
How about tomorrow instead?
Relis snarled at Adolin, a very un-Elethi display, and shoved his cousin farther away.
I can't see why you're so eager, Adolin. Shouldn't you focus on protecting that father of yours? It's always sad when a soldier lives long enough to see his wits go. Has he started wetting himself in public yet?
Steady, Adolin told himself. Relis was trying to goad him, maybe get Adolin to take a hasty swing. That would let him petition to the king for redress and avoiding of all contracts with his house, including the dueling agreement with Elit. But the insult went too far. His companions gasped slightly, pulling away at the very un-Elethi bluntness. Adolin didn't give in to the desperate goading. He had what he wanted. He wasn't certain what he could do about the assassin, but this was a way to help. Elit wasn't ranked highly, but he served Ruthar, who was, more and more, acting as Sarius's right-hand man. Beating him would take Adolin one step closer to the real goal, a duel with Sarius himself. He turned to leave and stopped short. Someone stood behind him, a stout man with a bulbous face and black curly hair. His complexion was ruddy, the nose too red, fine veins visible in his cheeks. The man had the arms of a soldier, despite his frivolous outfit, which was, Adolin admitted grudgingly, quite fashionable. Dark slacks that were trimmed with forest green silk, a short open coat over a stiff matching shirt, scarf at the neck. Toril Sadius, High Prince, Shardbearer, and the very man Adolin had been thinking of, the single person he hated most in the world.
"Another duel, young Adolin," Sadius said, taking a sip of wine. "You really are determined to embarrass yourself out there. I still find it strange your father abandoned his prohibition of you dueling. Indeed, I thought it a matter of honor to him."
Adolin pushed past Sadius, not trusting himself to speak so much as a single word to this eel of a man. Sight of the man brought memories of stark panic as he watched Sadius retreat from the field of battle to leave Adolin and his father alone and surrounded. Havar, Parathom, and Ilamar, good soldiers, good friends, had died that day. They and 6,000 more. Sadius grabbed Adolin's shoulder as he passed.
"Think what you will, son," the man whispered. "But what I did was intended as a kindness to your father. A tip of the sword to an old ally."
"Let go."
"If you lose your mind as you age, pray to the Almighty there are people like myself willing to give you a good death. People who care enough not to snicker, but instead hold the sword for you as you fall on it."
"I'll have your throat in my hands, Sarius," Adolin hissed. "I'll squeeze and squeeze, then I'll sink my dagger into your gut and twist. A quick death is too good for you."
"Tisk," Sadius said, smiling. "Careful. It's a full room. What if someone heard you threatening a high prince?"
"The Elethi way. You could abandon an ally on the battlefield and everyone could know it. But an offense in person, well, that just wouldn't do. Society would frown on that. Nalan's hand. His father was right about them all."
Adolin turned in a quick motion, reversing out of Sadius's grip. His next moves were by instinct, his fingers balling, stepping in preparation to plant a fist in that smiling, self-satisfied face. A hand fell on Adolin's shoulder, causing him to hesitate.
"I don't think that would be wise, Bright Lord Adolin,"
said a soft but stern voice. It reminded Adolin of his father, though the timbre was off. He glanced at Amaram, who had stepped up beside him. Tall, with a face like chipped stone, Bright Lord Meridus Amaram was one of the only light-eyed men in the room who wore a proper uniform. As much as Adolin wished he himself could wear something more fashionable, he had come to realize the importance of the uniform as a symbol. Adolin took a deep breath, lowering his fist. Amaram nodded to Sadius, then turned Adolin by his shoulder and walked him away from the High Prince.
"You mustn't let him provoke you, Your Highness," Amaram said softly. "He'll use you to embarrass your father if he can."
They moved through the room full of chattering attendants. Drinks and finger food had been distributed. It had turned from a short break during the meeting into a full-blown party. Not surprising. With all the important light eyes here, people would want to mingle and connive.
"Why do you remain with him, Amaram?"
Adolin asked.
"He is my liege lord."
"You're of a rank that you could choose a new liege. Stormfather, you're a shardbearer now. Nobody would even question you. Come to our camp. Join with father."
"In doing that, I would create a divide," Amaram said softly. "So long as I remain with Sadius, I can help bridge gaps. He trusts me. So does your father. My friendship with both is a step toward keeping this kingdom together."
"Sadius will betray you."
"No. High Prince Sadius and I have an understanding."
"We thought we had one. Then he set us up."
Amaram's expression grew distant. Even the way he walked was so full of decorum, straight back, nodding with respect to many they passed. The perfect light-eyed general, brilliantly capable, yet not lofty. A sword for his High Prince to employ. He'd spent the majority of the war diligently training new troops and sending the best of them to Sadius, while guarding sections of Alethkar. Amaram was half the reason that Sadius had been so effective out here on the Shattered Plains.
"Your father is a man who cannot bend," Amaram said. "I wouldn't have it any other way, Adolin. But it does mean that the man he has become is not someone who can work with High Prince Sadius."
"And you're different?"
"Yes."
Adolin snorted. Amaram was one of the finest the kingdom had, a man with a sterling reputation.
"I doubt that."
"Sadius and I agree that the means we choose to reach an honorable goal are allowed to be distasteful. Your father and I agree on what that goal should be. A better Alethkar. A place without all of this squabbling. It is a matter of perspective."
He continued talking, but Adolin found his mind drifting. He'd heard enough of this speech from his father. If Amaram started quoting the Way of Kings at him, he'd probably scream. At least, who was that? Gorgeous red hair. There wasn't a single lock of black in it. A slender build, so different from the curvaceous Alethi. A silken blue dress, simple yet elegant. Pale skin, it almost had a shin look to it, matched by light blue eyes. A slight dusting of freckles under the eyes, giving her an exotic cast. The young woman seemed to glide through the room. Adolin twisted about, watching her pass. She was so different.
"Ashes, eyes," Amaram said, chuckling. "You're still doing that, are you?"
Adolin pried his eyes away from the girl. "Doing what?"
"Letting your eyes be drawn by every flitting little thing that swishes by. You need to settle down, son. Pick one. Your mother would be mortified to find you still unwed."
"Yasna's unwed, too. She's a decade older than me."
Assuming she was still alive, as Aunt Navani was convinced.
"Your cousin is hardly a role model in that regard."
His tone implied more. Or any regard.
"Look at her, Amaram,"
Adolin said, craning to the side and watching the young woman approach his father.
"That hair. Have you ever seen anything such a deep shade of red?"
"Vaden, I'd warrant," Amaram said. "Horn-eater blood. There are family lines that pride themselves on it.
Vaden. It couldn't be, could it?
Excuse me, Adolin said, breaking away from Amaram, and shoving, politely, his way over to where the young woman was speaking to his father and his aunt.
Bright Lady Yasna did go down with the ship, I'm afraid, the woman was saying. I'm sorry for your loss.
38. The Silent Storm. Now, as the Windrunners were thus engaged, arose the event which has hitherto been referenced, namely that discovery of some wicked thing of eminence, though whether it be some rogueries among the Radiant's adherents, or of some external origin, Avena would not suggest. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 38, Page 6. Sorry for your loss, Shallan said. I have brought with me what things of Yasna's I was able to recover. My men have them outside. She found it surprisingly difficult to say the words with an even tone. She'd grieved for Yasna during her week's traveling, yet speaking of the death, remembering that terrible night, returned the emotions like surging waves, threatening to overwhelm again. The image she'd drawn of herself came to her rescue. She could be that woman today, and that woman, while not emotionless, could push through the loss. She focused her attention on the moment and the task at hand, specifically the two people in front of her, Dalinar and Navani Kolin. The High Prince was exactly what she'd expected him to be, a man with blunted features, short black hair silvering at the sides. His stiff uniform made him seem the only one in the room who knew anything about combat. She wondered if those bruises on his face were the result of the campaign against the Parshendi. Navani looked like a version of Yasna 20 years older, still pretty, though with a motherly air. Shallan could never imagine Yasna being motherly. Navani had been smiling as Shallan approached, but now that levity was gone. She still had hope for her daughter, Shallan thought, as the woman sat down in a nearby seat. I just crushed it.
I thank you for bringing us this news, Bright Lord Dalinar said. It is good to have confirmation.
It felt terrible. Not just to be reminded of the death, but to weigh others down with it as well. I have information for you, Shallan said, trying to be delicate. About the things Yasna was working on.
More about those parchment? Navani snapped. Storms. That woman was too fascinated by them. Ever since she got it into her head that she was to blame for Gavilar's death.
What was this? That wasn't a side of all this that Shallan had ever heard.
Her research can wait, Navani said, eyes fierce. I want to know exactly what happened when you think you saw her die. Precisely as you remember it, girl. No details passed over.
Perhaps after the meeting,
Dalinar said, resting a hand on Navani's shoulder. The touch was surprisingly tender. Was this not his brother's wife? That look in his eyes, was that familial affection for his sister, or was it something more?
No, Dalinar, Navani said. Now. I would hear it now.
Shallan took a deep breath, preparing to begin, steeling herself against the emotions, and finding herself surprisingly in control. As she gathered her thoughts, she noticed a blonde-haired young man watching her. That would likely be Adrelin. He was handsome, as rumors indicated, and wore a blue uniform like his father. And yet, Adolin's was somehow more stylish? Was that the right word? She liked how his somewhat unruly hair contrasted with the crisp uniform. It made him seem more real, less picturesque. She turned back to Navani. I woke in the middle of the night to shouting and the smell of smoke. I opened my door to unfamiliar men crowded around the doorway to Yasna's cabin, across the companionway from my own.
They had her body on the floor and... Brightness? I watched them stab her through the heart. I'm sorry. Navani tensed, head flinching as if she'd been slapped. Shallan continued. She tried to give Navani as much truth as she could, but obviously the things Shallan had done, weaving light, soul-casting the ship, weren't wise to share, at least for now. Instead, she indicated that she'd barricaded herself in her cabin, a lie she'd already prepared. I heard the men yelling up above as they were being executed one by one, Shallan said. I realized that the only hope I could give them was a crisis for the brigands, so I used the torch I'd taken and set the ship on fire. On fire? Navani asked, horrified. With my daughter unconscious? Navani, Dalinar said, squeezing her shoulder. You doomed her, Navani said, locking eyes with Shallan. Yasna wouldn't have been able to swim like the others. She... Navani, Dalinar repeated more firmly. This child's choice was a good one. You can hardly expect her to have taken on a band of men single-handed. And what she saw... Yasna was not unconscious, Navani. It was too late to do anything for her at that point. The woman took a deep breath, obviously struggling to keep her emotions in check.
I apologize, she said to Shallan. I am not myself at the moment. And I stray toward the irrational. Thank you for bringing word to us. She stood. Excuse me.
Dalinar nodded, letting her make a reasonably graceful exit. Shallan stepped back, hands clasped before herself, feeling impotent and strangely ashamed as she watched Navani leave. She hadn't expected that to go particularly well, and it hadn't. She took the moment to check on Pattern, who was on her skirt, practically invisible. Even if he was noticed, he'd be thought an odd part of the fabric design, assuming that was he did as she'd ordered and didn't move or speak.
I assume your trip here was an ordeal, Dalinar said, turning to Shallan. Shipwrecked in the Frostlands?
Yes. Fortunately, I met with a caravan and traveled with them this way. We did encounter bandits, I regret to say, but were rescued by the timely arrival of some soldiers.
Soldiers? Dalinar said, surprised. From what banner?
They did not say, Shallan replied. I take it they were formerly of the Shattered Plains.
Deserters?
I have not asked for specifics, Bright Lord, Shallan said. But I did promise them clemency for previous crimes, in recognition of their act of nobility. They saved dozens of lives. Everyone in the caravan I joined can vouch for the bravery of these men. I suspect they sought atonement and a chance to start over.
I will see that the king seals pardons for them, Dalinar said. Prepare a list for me. Hanging soldiers always feels like a waste.
Shallan relaxed. One item dealt with. There is another matter of some delicacy we must discuss, Bright Lord, Shallan said. They both turned toward Adolin, loitering nearby. He smiled. And he did have a very nice smile. When Yasna had first explained the causal to her, Shallan's interest had been completely abstract. Marriage into a powerful Alethi house? Allies for her brothers? Legitimacy and a way to continue working with Yasna for the salvation of the world? These had seemed like wonderful things. Looking at Adolin's grin, however, she didn't consider any of those advantages. Her pains of speaking of Yasna didn't fade completely, but she found it much easier to ignore them when looking at him. She found herself blushing. This, she thought, could be dangerous. Adolin stepped up to join them, the hum of conversation all around giving them some privacy within the crowd. He had found a cup of orange wine for her somewhere, which he held out.
Shallan Devar,
he asked. Was she? Oh, right. She took the wine. Yes?
Adolin Colin, he said. I am sorry to hear of your hardships. We will need to speak to the king of his sister. I can spare you that task if I might go in your place.
Thank you, Shallan said. But I would prefer to see him myself.
Of course, Adolin said. As for our involvement, it did make a lot more sense when you were Yasna's ward, didn't it?
Probably.
Though, now that you're here, perhaps we should go for a walk and just see how things feel.
I like to walk, Shallan said. Stupid, quick, say something witty. Your hair is nice.
A part of her, the part trained by Tin, groaned. My hair?
Adolin said, touching it.
Yes, Shallan said, trying to get her sluggish brain working again.
Blonde hair isn't often seen in Yakaved.
Some people see it as a mark of my bloodline being impure.
Funny. They say the same thing about me because of my hair. She smiled at him. That seemed the right move, since he smiled back. Her verbal recovery hadn't been the deftest of her career, but she couldn't be doing so poorly, so long as he was smiling. Dalinar cleared his throat. Shallan blinked. She'd completely forgotten that the High Prince was there.
Adolin, he said. Fetch me some wine. Father?
Adolin turned to him.
Oh, all right then.
He walked off. Ashes, eyes! That man was handsome. She turned to Dalinar, who, well, wasn't. Oh, he was distinguished, but his nose had been broken at some point, and his face was a tad unfortunate. The bruises didn't help either. In fact, he was downright intimidating.
I would know more of you, he said softly. The precise status of your family, and why you are so eager to be involved with my son.
My family is destitute, Shallan said. Frankness seemed the right approach with this man. My father is dead, though the people to whom we owe money do not yet know it. I had not considered a union with Adolin until Yasna suggested it, but I would seize it eagerly, if allowed. Marriage into your house would provide my family with a great deal of protection.
She still didn't know what to do about the soul caster her brothers owed.
One step at a time. Dalinar grunted. He wouldn't have expected her to be so direct.
So you have nothing to offer, he said.
From what Yasna said to me of your opinions, Shallan said, I did not assume that my monetary or political offerings would be your first consideration. If such a union was your goal, you'd have had Prince Adolin married off years ago. She winced at her forwardness. With all due respect, Bright Lord.
No offense taken, Dalinar said. I like it when people are direct. Just because I want to let my son have a say in the matter doesn't mean I don't want him to marry well. A woman from a minor foreign house who professes her family is destitute and who brings nothing to the union?
I did not say I could offer nothing, Shallan replied. Bright Lord, how many wards has Yasna Colin taken in the last 10 years?
None that I know of, he admitted.
Do you know how many she has turned away?
I've an inkling.
Yet she took me. Might that not constitute an endorsement of what I can offer? Dalinar nodded slowly.
We will maintain the causal for now, he said. The reason I agreed to it in the first place still stands. I want Adolin to be seen as unavailable to those who would manipulate him for political gain. If you can somehow persuade me, Brightness Navani, and of course the lad himself, we can progress the causal to a full betrothal. In the meantime, I'll give you a position among my lesser clerks. You can prove yourself there.
The offer, though generous, felt like ropes tightening about her. The stipend of a lesser clerk would be enough to live on, but nothing to brag about. And she had no doubt that Dalinar would be watching her. Those eyes of his were scarily discerning. She wouldn't be able to move without her actions being reported to him. His charity would be her prison. "That is generous of you, Bright Lord," she found herself saying. "But I actually have..."
"Dalinar!"
one of the others in the room called.
"Are we going to start this meeting again sometime today? Or am I going to have to order in a proper dinner?"
Dalinar turned toward a plump, bearded man in traditional clothing, an open-fronted robe over a loose shirt and warrior's skirt, called a takama. High Prince Sabariel, Shallan thought. Yasna's notes dismissed him as obnoxious and useless. She'd had kinder words even for High Prince Sadius, whom she had noted was not to be trusted.
"Fine, fine, Sabariel,"
Dalinar said, breaking away from Shallan and walking to a group of seats in the center of the room. He settled down in one beside the desk there. A proud man with a prominent nose settled down next to him. That would be the king, Elokar. He was younger than Shallan had pictured. Why had Sabariel called on Dalinar to reconvene the meeting and not the king? The next few moments were a test of Shallan's preparation as high-born men and women settled themselves in the lavish chairs. Beside each one was a small table, and behind that, a master servant for important needs. A number of parshmen kept the tables filled with wine, nuts, and fresh and dried fruit. Shallan shivered each time one of those passed her. She counted the high princes off in her head. Sadius was easy to pick out, red-faced from visible veins under the skin, like her father had displayed after drinking. Others nodded to him and let him seat himself first. He seemed to command as much respect as Dalinar. His wife, Iole, was a slender-necked woman with thick lips, large bust, and a wide mouth.